This is Kelly.
And this is Amy.
And you're listening to Diary of a Death Investigator. We're doing the final countdown to 50. Nothing really big happens at 50.
I was like, what are we counting down for?
Well, I think 50 is quite the number. We've gone back, or I go back and listen to our old ones. And I think from where we started to where we are now, we're getting better. I don't think anybody really understands the process of podcasting, because Amy and I both have full-time jobs. On the last episode, I told you I had been in Coachella for a couple of weeks. And by Coachella, I just mean the desert activating. But that had been a project, a labor of love, because I had been working on that for 4 months and I came into it late. So, you know, we're busy people.
Kelly is a lot busier than I am. Admittedly, I will say that. And I'm doing other things behind the scenes, but I'm not going to announce that yet, I don't think.
And so, but my point in saying that is, like, every other week or every 3 to 4 weeks, Amy and I will record 2 or 3 episodes at a time. Then I usually go back and listen to them. Then we send them to Joel. Joel's an angel and gets them back within usually 2 days when he knows that we put out on Wednesdays. So he will send them to me on Tuesday nights. I'm in bed listening to them just to approve them so that I can upload them the next day. So, you know, it's a lot of work. So we appreciate you guys listening. I just don't want you to think we just throw something together, though, like, because it does take time and we enjoy doing it. So, you know, we started this at the end of July.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
We're almost, I guess we are almost to a year anniversary.
So, you know, 50's not so bad.
I'll just be here for the creative energy. So.
Well, and hopefully Amy can find a good one for us at 50. Maybe we do like a fun autopsy or something, or we can talk about a case. Maybe that wasn't yours, but maybe we can dig up some cases and review them for that.
Oh, I'll get creative.
But going to count down to 50, this is episode 41, and we're calling this one Daddy Dearest.
Yes. And actually, this case, I will start off with saying that originally this was reported to me as a possible suicide, and then that did change very quickly. So when I got this call, this was reported to me almost 12 hours after the fact, which is very late, which was concerning to me. I'm always very skeptical as to what's happening at a scene, which it's different per agency. Sometimes I know that if it is the state that's taking over a case, I know that they're understaffed, and sometimes processing a scene takes them a long time. And if it's like a certain agency where if there's a lot of, I should say, evidence in the area of ballistics, where say it's like a officer involved shooting and there's like 70 casings on scene, that can take a long time to process as well, because it's very meticulous in measuring.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I don't want to break your train of thought, but you said so 12 hours after. So you're saying you got the call 12 hours after law enforcement got there.
Yes. So after she was pronounced deceased at the scene is when I got the call. So officers have been on the scene for 12 hours. And I'm like, what have you been doing all this time? Because this body has just been on the scene this whole time for 12 hours, which is concerning to me. Because really, if this is a suspicious death, you can be contaminating evidence on this person. And honestly, we probably could have been done with the autopsy that day and gotten her back out to her family. But regardless, that was just one of these cases. So I get to this scene, and the father is there at the scene at the time. Mother is not present at the scene. What I'm told is that mother and father and adult daughter, who is 22, live in this home together. Daughter has no prior medical history. She was stated to have gone out the night prior on a date, and apparently the date had gone really well. She had texted her date when she had gotten home and said that she looked forward to seeing him again, and I guess that everything had gone well. So then I guess her and her father had gotten into an argument, and she goes into the kitchen as per stated by the father, and he's not sure what she's doing. He walks into the kitchen and finds her over the stove with a gun pointed to her head, and they start struggling over the gun, and the gun goes off. So then apparently this is his story. He drags her into the living room and calls his wife, and 30 minutes later is when they call emergency services. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if the wife is at work during this time. I think the wife is a nurse, so I think she's at work during this time. This is at night. She's working the night shift. So I'm not sure why they didn't call emergency services earlier. So that's also a red flag to me as well. They live in the city where they're very close to a hospital. Like, they could have called emergency services and they should have been there within like less than 5 minutes. So when emergency services arrive, they don't even have to put any leads or anything on her. As far as, you know, to find a heart rate, she's pronounced deceased by the time they get there. One thing that becomes evident to law enforcement when they're doing a like background check on the father is that the father has had charges pressed against him by the daughter for molestation. Yeah, disgusting. Apparently, when this happened, the father had been intoxicated, and so, which isn't an excuse ever, which is almost makes it worse. So I guess this night, you know, or whenever this happened, he had been drinking and she came home, and that's why they had started arguing. And so,
why is she even living in this house? And why is this mother allowing her to live in this house? Like, I understand she's probably desperate and that's a really unfair position to be in. But as a parent, that mother obviously sounds responsible. A nurse makes pretty good money. So, like,
leave him. Why is she with him? Yeah, why is she even with him still? Like, leave him and let the daughter move in with you. I don't know. I have no idea.
Did you see this guy? Is he even good looking?
Ew, no. Disgusting. So disgusting.
I mean.
Yeah, because I told you when I got there, the dad was still there. Like, the dad was in the front yard. And so something that was pretty obvious when I got there was that he was blatantly drunk, intoxicated heavily. And the officers that were like the first responders on scene, they said they thought it was really weird was that when he went out into the front yard, like, whenever they arrived, he had blood all over himself. And so he picked up dirt, like, out of the planter and was, like, wiping the blood off with the dirt. Like,
so wait, you got there 12 hours after.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he called services 30 minutes after she died. So he was that drunk that he was still drunk, or had he been drinking? Cops won't let him drink, right? They wouldn't.
No.
So he was that drunk for 12 hours.
So no unless way. He was going back in, because this was at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I bet you he was going in and drinking more, because there's no way. And I think you've said this before. Like, you can't take when they're drinking or when they're drunk, you can't get a statement, right? Like, you can't, it's not a...
Right. It's not admissible, technically.
So, if he keeps drinking, he can't really say anything. I mean,
unless he was taking pills. Because he was very obviously...
on something.
Intoxicated. Yes, he was not in his right state of mind. Well, I did say drunk. So
okay, because I was like, I just assumed intoxicated was drunk when you said it. But yeah, because that's a long time. I mean, if he is an alcoholic and drinks a lot, he can drink a lot. So he wouldn't be that intoxicated 12 hours later is my point.
So they said he was intoxicated when the daughter got home. And then he... still, I mean, he was very obviously still intoxicated when I showed up. So either he was getting something out of the house or from his vehicle, or, I mean, when you're on a scene that long,
yeah,
who knows? So he could have been going to the bathroom, or I don't know. Who knows what they were allowing him to do for that long. So I don't know why they needed the scene for 12 hours for what they did, but, or didn't do, because they weren't done when I got there. And then they said, you know, when they saw him come out into the front yard, when they arrived, he was trying to cover himself up in dirt to dry out the blood that was on him. So I thought that was weird too.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you just wipe it off somewhere else? Like, what, because you don't want to get your scene dirty? I mean, I would expect that him to have blood on him if his daughter, if he said he dragged her into another room.
Yeah. So the kitchen was maybe, I don't know, 20 feet away from like where she was. It was like the kitchen and living room were attached. So he just dragged her from the kitchen into the living room and she was flat on her back. So when I got there, like their CSI unit was still there. Like everyone was still in there. Like everyone and their dog had been in there and had to step over her to get in and out of that house. So I'm like, I mean, literally everyone's evidence is going to be on her at this point because everyone's had to walk over her. Then they had to call in this guy. I can't, literally cannot, I cannot with this guy. He is a, I don't know if he's a crime scene specialist is what he calls himself, or a ballistics specialist, but I'll just say that I embarrassed him at the scene and proved him wrong. So,
and just, you know, when Amy's talking about this, she's like looking up, trying to like looking up at the ceiling, trying to come up with the nicest.
I am, because I'm really trying to not have a rant, which I'm improving.
Yes.
This is good. This is good.
It.
Anyways, I do my examination first so I can get her out of the house, which I have had an experience with one of these CSI agents before. And this girl drives me nuts because we've been on another scene before. It was at a hospital with a child and she was trying her darndest to find trauma on this child with this poor mom who was grieving. And she was like, "What's that?" And I was like, "That's his nipple." And she was like, "I don't need your help. Like, thanks." And she kept trying to like offer her help to me. Like, "Do you want my help? Like searching for the exit wound in her hair?" I'm like, "No, I just want you to move." Like, this girl was, she's 22 years old, the decedent, clearly full Rigor. She's stiff, because she's been sitting in this position for 12 hours. She is just drenched in blood. She was shot in the face. It was in the front of the face, like almost like through her, like almost dead set through the front of the nose. And the blood is dry on her face. It's just crusted because she's been sitting in this position for so long. And her hair is just like congealed, like with blood. It's just dried and matted. And they're telling me that because they have this expert here, that he says that this projectile exited her head. And I'm like, her head is very intact for having a projectile have exited her head. And I am like feeling around the back of her head, because with that trajectory angle, like, I was just very confused as to like, am I just completely missing this? Like, I'm feeling around the back of her head. Like, maybe it like splintered off inside, like through her sinus cavities. And I'm just like, okay, well, I take one of our long Q-tips that we had and I like try to find trajectory angle, and it was straight on. So I'm like 99% certain, like, this is still in her head. And he's like, "There's no way." And I was like, "Okay, well, I don't know where it is then. Like, you're probably going to be searching here for another couple of hours and to find that. But I can't even find an exit hole in her head." So I said, "Well, maybe it's just because her hair's so matted with blood." And then here's this girl still yapping in my face, "You want me to help you?" And I'm just like, "No." So, so I'm trying to get pictures of her hands and stuff, because that's important for anything where there's a possible struggle, especially, you know, with her arms and stuff, like looking for bruising. And I get her loaded up into the transport van, and then we get her sent on her way. And I go into the kitchen, and I'm asking this expert to what he thinks happens here based upon the blood spatter. He's like, well, this is the position that the father says that they were in at the time of the struggle. So he says that she's facing towards this oven, and that her head is like bent down over the oven, and she has the gun pointed directly towards her face, and that her thumbs are like gripping over the trigger, and it's a revolver. And so, in fact, it's a Taurus Magnum 357 revolver, which a 357 is a very high-powered gun. And yes, that should...
exit.
Technically exit, yes.
But is it so, like a judge public defender?
No, that's a totally different gun. So I'm like, okay, well, I said, okay, so why do you think this exited her head? And he's like, well, if you look at this blood spatter here, there's castings here and here, and look at that satellite spot. I'm like, I see one blood droplet. And I was like, honestly, there's really not a lot of blood spatter, and it's all in the front of this cabinet facing the oven. And I looked behind me and I was like, don't you think there would be brain matter?
I even think behind,
that. Yeah, I was like, back behind us here, if there, and I was like, there would be hair, there'd be blood, there'd be brain matter. And he's like, no, not necessarily. And I was like, well, I'm not like, let's see, what year was this? I had been doing this for 4 years at the time. And I was like, I've been doing this for a couple of years now, but I do a lot of gunshot cases. And I was like, usually ones that exit, they're going to take something with it. And if it's that big of a projectile, there's going to be some damage. And like, he did not want to listen. And I'm like, that's fine. So I'm like walking through, and I was like, are we sure that it's that gun? And they're like, yes, there's a spent casing that's still in the cartridge. And I was like, well, that doesn't mean anything, because there's like five other guns in here. Did you guys check any of these other guns that are literally sitting in this living room? Like, this guy just had guns literally just sitting on, like, one was like on the coffee table, one was on a shelf. Like, there's a shotgun that's like over their fireplace. So I'm like, did you guys even check these? Did you even like open these to look and see? No, they didn't. So I did though, but I'm just sticking with what they have here. So I did the 357, and I also made sure, I said, hey, called my morgue people, said, hey, I have a body coming in right now. Would you do me a favor and just make sure that you x-ray her as soon as she comes in? I really want to know if there's a projectile in her head. That would be fantastic. Thanks. So I'm still on the scene here at this time, and I'm like taking pictures of everything, still like on the scene and asking them questions. And then the body shows up at the morgue, and they do an x-ray. And you know what they find? They found a projectile in her head. And then I made sure to show everybody working at that scene that there was projectile. And I just said, oh, hey, you know what? The body just got to the morgue, and I had them x-ray her just to make sure. And they found the projectile in her head. So I just thought you guys should know. It'd probably save you some time searching.
And what do you say?
Nothing. So, anyways, we ended up doing the autopsy on her, and what they found was very interesting, which if this was actually her shooting herself, it would have been in a closer range pattern where it could have exited. But when they cleaned off her face, yes, you probably know where this is going, because we've talked about this before. When we cleaned all the blood off of her face, it was crazy. The stippling pattern that we saw on her face was...
What does that mean?
So stippling is the pattern from the unburnt gunpowder, which causes abrasions on the face.
Okay.
Or on the skin.
Okay.
So we've talked about this before, and it basically shows how far away the gun is at the time that it goes off. So this was just like so remarkable, like on her face. Like, we all were just like, holy crap. Like, I don't know how, like, you could even say that, because, like, just even if she would not have been able to have control of that revolver within that range, but to be, like, even, like, dead center. So the spray pattern on her face, just to be dead center, it was just this perfect circular pattern across her face. And it was almost like this purplish red. Because remember, it's not burnt powder. It's the abrasive, like, scratching of the skin. So that's where they were like, yeah, there's no way that, like, she could have shot herself from this. This is, like, suspicious.
Yeah, even at arm's length, if she were, right? That's what you're trying to say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they, like, brought the dad in for more questioning. Is like, one, because of, like, prior accusations against him. Like, two, the way he was acting on scene. Three, the story is, like, super weird. Anytime, like, you say that you are fighting over, like, a gun. And also, I think that he was covering up, like, his arms with dirt to get the gunpowder off of his hands and arms.
So they didn't even test his hands for gun?
No.
Is that something that would be pretty typical? Like, would you encase, because you don't know?
If you are fighting over a gun and a gun goes off within the vicinity of you, like, that's something that they would do. So
they should have done it.
Especially if he has that many guns. He's very familiar with how guns work and, like, the function of them and how gunpowder works. So
also a very good shot for somebody who is intoxicated.
Yeah. Well, if you're in a close enough range, and the kitchen was very small, I'm trying to think what maybe the space between the oven. So it was like the oven stovetop where the, like, counterpane was, like, maybe a 5 foot, like, space there. And so that was kind of like the range of where they had been fighting at. So, yeah, there was just a lot of things that just didn't add up there. And especially with him waiting 30 minutes before they called, like, emergency services, called the wife first. Yeah, all these different things. So,
and
yeah,
did anybody question the wife?
I don't remember anything with the wife. I'm sure that there's information out there, but
she's probably cuckoo too.
Well, could you just imagine all the stuff that she's, I mean, put up with just living with him and all of his crazy stuff? So, yeah. So he ends up getting arrested. Like, he's charged with, like, her homicide. And I knew that he was trying to appeal it. And that's the last thing I heard of that. But
do they know why he did it?
I don't know. I don't know if he was maybe trying to do something to her and maybe she was trying to fight him off, or I don't know. I'm not sure.
It sounds like he was prepared to do something with 5 guns in the living room, like, just random guns. Unless he thought he was trying to throw you off by having all the guns in there, you know, like, oh, she just happened to pick up a gun. And
yeah, I don't know if he was trying to say that she was, like, depressed prior or whatever, but, like, everything else that, like, the mom had said was, I think she was actually going to school for something in the medical field as well. And with her just going on, like, a date and the date going really well. So there's, like, no reason for her to have been upset enough to, like, try to, like, kill herself, unless they were saying, like, she was trying to, like, shoot him. But I don't know.
Poor date, too. Because, like, he probably, if he thought it went well, too, and then he's waiting for her to text back, and then he's, like, waiting. I don't know if he tried texting her again, but, you know, and then he hears about it on the news, like, the date, the night he went on a date with this girl.
Yeah, that's, no kidding.
That's rough.
So, yeah, kind of a crazy case, frustrating in so many ways, but man, it feels good when you're right.
Well, good thing you were right and not wrong, because that could have gone another way too, but
I've had that happen a couple times, actually, and I'm just like, hey, I could be wrong, but this is just what I'm finding, and this is what this is consistent with. And if, I mean, I would say 9 times out of 10, I've been right.
So. Well, you know, you just never know kind of like what's going on in the human body either. I was, and this is a little off topic, but I was reading about a lady who got really, really sick. And she, to the point, I think she might have been in the medical field or something, but she was like, she was in really good shape. She didn't understand. And she just kept getting like fevers, right? And the fevers like weren't going away. So like an infection, but they couldn't find anything in her body. She like went all over for this. Well, then she ended up having a fibroid, a large one, and she had it removed. Well, when she had it removed, they tested it and it came back positive for salmonella.
Oh, how weird.
It's so weird, right? So like, even if you know so many things or you think you know so much, there's always this like curveball, right? And the I was going to say the more that time goes on. And the more time goes on, science gets better, right? So think of where we are now from like 20 years ago.
And well, now if it's something like cancer related or something like internal, oh my gosh, I would never attempt to be like, now I know that it's this. But I mean, when you've seen, I can tell you personally, I worked one shift where I had 5 gunshot suicides and they were all to the head. When you see that many of them in that many years, like you just, you know what to look for, you know what it, but like, you know, I've had some where I'm like so convinced that it's, you know, like the one I said where I was wrong and then I learned from that. So,
well, that's everything. They say you got to make mistakes in order to figure it out. Because if you never make a mistake, you don't know that what you're doing is wrong, or you're not taking the risk to assume that anyway. But you know,
yeah. So anything that's an abnormality, I now would be like, I'm going to hold off my comment on that. But something that I know is like, I get this all the time.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think it's pretty safe to say. Even like, you know, you said, well, I would know that there would be something there. So
that's true. I would know.
I don't claim to be a expert crime scene. So I hope he learned something that day too.
Everybody was learning. Well, that was good. I mean, it's good. It's just sad. I feel like I learn a lot about this and, you know, it's interesting because our phones secretly listen to us, right? Because I'm always getting the advertisements.
It doesn't secretly do it. You get advertisements now.
That's true. And we keep hearing about these investigations or the parents appealing. And I'm being, the specific one I'm talking about is the boy in Tennessee, the one that drowned. And I find myself, because it keeps popping up on Instagram, you know, I keep responding to people in the comments. They're just like, well, the coroner said that he didn't have fluid in his lungs. And, you know, and I have said, well, my sister has said that like the coroner doesn't necessarily have to have a medical background. And then it's like shocking for the people, right? Because it was shocking for me when I heard it. You can also Google it, and Google tells you that you don't have to have a medical background. So I think like, it's so crazy that people have these things set in their minds that like, oh, this is the way that it's supposed to work. And this is what happens on scene because of TV, but also common sense. Because you're like, well, yeah, wouldn't a coroner have like medical?
And honestly, if these people were if they were interested enough to know, you can do a quick Google search to actually look up how drownings work. You can have a dry drowning on land where you don't have fluid in your lungs. So
I just want to tell everybody you need to listen to our podcast because you'll know exactly what it is. And I'm not even saying to like,
and I'm not a doctor. But I just, from years and honestly listening to my own doctors and watching like literally thousands of autopsies, like you learn so much just from listening and watching doctors and doing your own research. Because if I was ever curious to know something that I did not know, like how many cases of natural deaths that I got, like it was very typical of us to have in one shift of 24 hours being on call, 20 to 25 calls, where the majority of those would be natural deaths. And some of those things you would never have heard of in your life. And I would look those up so I would learn what it was. And so if you don't know what it is and you truly are interested in a case, wouldn't you think you would search that up? Like, oh, no water in lungs in a drowning case. Like,
Well, I think everybody I think it's intriguing for them because they're like, well, he didn't have any clothes on or he's missing this. And, you know, listening to you talk about it.
It's because the parents really want there to be closure because it's much easier to justify something like that and saying that he was killed instead of saying that he was very drunk and he had an accident and fell into the river and drowned. That is much easier for them to say it wasn't his fault. And that sounds really terrible, but because I've had so many cases like that, it's much easier to justify that instead of saying there was this really stupid accident that my kid had and that's why he's deceased now.
Right. Well, we know that people do stupid things, but going back to like why he may not have clothes on or his watch missing or his wallet missing, you said it before. If an unhoused person comes along and sees him, like they're not going to say anything. They're just going to take stuff off of him because you saw it.
They will have other people report deaths for them, like if they find someone dead, because they just don't want to like deal with the police, which I completely understand because they're associated with criminal activity, some, you know, sometimes. So it's like they just don't want to deal with the police. And so a lot of times, like when I've dealt with drowning victims that were floating in a river or something, like specifically I can think of one, and I said, well, who reported this, like who saw? And they said, well, originally it was a homeless person that lives down here that asked somebody to go up and make the call to us because they just didn't want to report it themselves. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, and to me that's not suspicious because where else are they gonna, they live under these overpasses, which is right over under a river or whatever, you know? So I don't know. To me, that's normal.
Right.
So
you might catch me in the comments of Entertainment Tonight or...
I'm just glad you don't post me in those anymore. I'm like, I don't want to respond to this. Like five paragraph long things. I'm like, I actually have to like think of educated answers. I'm like...
You're like, just listen to our podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm like, I just talked about this ad nauseum. Like...
But if you do have any topics or questions that you want to ask Amy, even if it's on this and she will write a paragraph for you or we can talk about it on the podcast, you can email us at kelly@diaryofadeathinvestigator.com or you can message us on our Instagram page, Diary of a Death Investigator. Sorry, Stevie's been super active this. I don't know if Jewel's going to be able to get her out, but you know, she's awake and... And there she goes.
I know. She's probably barking at the neighbors. So this is the way I live.
Keeping everybody safe. Keeping everyone safe.
That's her job.
All right, guys. Until next time.
Bye.